The Feel Better Station for Warrington Hospital.
This is Radio General.
Now, the final hooter.
Yes, welcome to the final hooter for another week here on Radio General and via loverugbyleague.com. My name's Dave Parkinson, I'm your host for this evening, and I'll be fair, it's a jam-packed show. We're going to be looking at the results from the last week. I've got a whole host of people that I'm wanting to fit into the show. And without further ado, I'm going to start by concentrating on none other than London Broncos. So the Broncos, they've been in really good form as of late, but they did slip up at the weekend when they took on Hull Kingston Rovers in the Kingston Press Championship Round 20 clash. Hull Kingston Rovers won by 40 points to 22. Okay, I'm delighted to be joined by Andrew Henderson, coach of the London Broncos. It's been probably about, what, 4 or 5 weeks since we last spoke, Andrew. That was right after the Blackpool Bash event when you had that really great result against Featherstone. How's the team been travelling since?
Yeah, well, obviously we kicked on after the Summer Bash, and we had a good win at home against Dewsbury, and backed that up with a magnificent result away at Toulouse, which was a big one for us. And then we did enough to come up and get the points at home against a very determined Featherstone side again, who were trying to make amends for the loss to them at the Summer Bash. So, but unfortunately, yeah, we just fell off the horse last week away at Hull Kingston Rovers. But overall, to be honest, Dave, it's been a good run for us. You know, we won 10 on the bounce there since the Easter period. So, it's certainly catapulted us forward and into the top two at this stage. But there's still three games to play, and we're probably going to have to win all three if we're going to finish second, to be honest.
I just wanted to concentrate just for a moment, because you mentioned there about that 10 match winning sequence, which was the best in Broncos history, wasn't it?
I believe it was certainly the best in Broncos history in the summer era since Super League started and whatnot. But I've got a sneaky feeling that maybe back in the early 80s, in League 2 or whatever division they were then, I think they might have had an 11-game winning or 12-game winning streak. I'm not sure. But I'll have to get the stats man, Steve McGee, on that one to confirm that. But certainly in the summer era, I believe it was the best run the club's had.
And as well, I know that obviously every team suffers injuries. I notice you've just recruited Bedebsa, haven't you?
Yeah, John Bedebsa, yeah. So, I'm a big fan of keeping continuity within the squad. I'm not a massive fan of bringing too many people in at this time of the year. I think it can go one of two ways. It could enhance your squad, but also could affect the dynamic of the team and the continuity of the team. So I generally go, and if I'm going to bring people in, they've got to either really truly enhance the squad, or, like you said, in this case with John, I just felt that obviously James Cunningham's been down now. He got injured at the Summer Bash and suffered an injury which is going to keep him out probably to around the middle of the Super 8s campaign. And then we obviously lost Will Bartow, in the game against Featherstone for a few weeks. So I just felt, we needed to probably look to bring another 9 or 7 in, and John was available. I know that the quality that John possesses, and I think he will add real good value to this team. Because obviously Jared Sammet's been covering a little bit at 9 during games for us, so whilst Cunningham was out, so I just felt we needed to bring another body in, and I'm sure John's going to, like you said, add some value to the team and enhance us moving forward.
He's had some desperate luck, hasn't he, James Cunningham?
Yeah, it's not been a good year for him, to be honest, Dave. He got injured in pre-season, early in pre-season. He had a shoulder injury, had to get operated on, and that saw him return. I can't remember what round it was. It might have been round 7 or 8. Of the championship that he returned, and he was just starting to find his feet again. He was just starting to get back into the form that we know he can produce. So, and then unfortunately he tore his groin at the Summer Bash. So it was just really, really disappointing for him. And we've yet to have a game, and it was the first game this season where we had both James Cunningham and Andy Akers on the in the game together. It's generally I've lost one and the other one's come back, vice versa. So obviously we had Akers at the start of the year, and then when he went down with an ankle injury, then Cunningham came back from the shoulder injury, then he's gone down with the groin, and Akers has just come back from the ankle. So we've not had too much luck in that department, but it is what it is, and that's the nature of the beast. I think last season We were pretty fortunate. We didn't have a big squad in 2016, but we were pretty fortunate on the injury front, and we didn't have too many major ones. But this season's just been a different kettle of fish. You know, we certainly had anywhere from 7 to 10 bodies out unavailable in that first half of the season, which certainly disrupted us and didn't allow us to probably get the consistency or continuity in our game, and especially with a lot of new faces as well having to fit in. Again, it was a 50% turnover of squad for us from last season. So it was a tough start, and then I guess we started to get some bodies back mid-season, but then a couple more have just fell away in recent weeks. So we just got to battle through that. And I know every coach has had to endure this at some point in their careers, and every team has had to face these issues, and it's how you handle that and how you adapt, maybe your way you play or your attitude towards certain games, and that helps you get through it. So it's just another challenge for us, and I'm sure we'll come through that as we prepare for the next competition.
I think you also learn a lot about different players when put under strains and stresses like that, don't you, and what their adversity level is like.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, some people, for some people it presents an opportunity, doesn't it? You know, and for a lot of people it does. You know, that they get an opportunity that they may not have had if those players were still playing and playing well. And so sometimes you can unearth new talent, a new star could be born. For other players, it's like I said, it's that opportunity to show what they're worth. Or they may have been out of the team because of form was dictating that, but then somebody gets injured and they get that opportunity to get back in and make amends and show what they're worth and what they're capable of. And you learn a lot about people, and certainly for me, I think obviously you don't want anybody getting injured, but when they do, it does present opportunity for players to stamp their mark.
I know that we've spoken a lot before about the development work that's being done behind the scenes, and there was that great result the other week, wasn't there, for your under-19s taking on Wigan and beating them.
Yeah, fantastic. No, look, we're proud at the moment of where we're at in terms of what we're contributing to the British game. You know, we're still developing our kids. We're still giving our kids an opportunity, or certainly London kids an opportunity, to come into a professional pathway within rugby league. We've got a great scholarship program up and running and some fantastic people working down there with those kids. That's headed up by Hugh Goodwin and his coaching team. And then obviously Jamie Langley's heading up the academy program, and all being overseen by Rob Powell, who's our head of youth. And, I'm really pleased. You know, we're currently a Tier 2 academy, but I'm quite hopeful that we'll become a Tier 1 academy moving forward. I think we've proven that with how we've progressed, both on the field and off the field, and the infrastructure we've got in place now at that academy level. And obviously, I think you're now seeing our scholarship teams are beating Super League clubs. You know, our academy team are beating Super League teams, and obviously now, that we just need to get that first team back into the top flight as well, and that'll be the icing on the cake. But in terms of what we're doing at that development stage, it's great to see we're still producing kids, not only for our first team, but still for the game as a whole. I mean, it's amazing now to look at to all three competitions, Super League, Championship and League One, and to see the amount of players that have come through the London system at some point in the last sort of maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 years are playing in these respective competitions. I think it's testament to the work that's gone on before myself, and the work that's obviously continuing on now whilst I'm here. So we're very proud of what we're doing, and I think we are producing some quality players for all competitions, and it's fantastic.
A little bit later in this show, we'll be hearing from Steve Tyre at Halifax, who has been installing the virtues of the reserve level. Obviously, you're a big one for the academy and the development. So, in some respects, when you're looking at the game as a whole, and you're looking at some of the more established teams in Super League that have got quite a bit more money, I would prefer to say, does it disappoint you that they don't seem to be running these type of competitions, and do you feel there's a bit of double standards somewhere?
Absolutely. No, I think I think personally, for me, we need a reserve competition in place. I think it's, at the moment, it's quite frustrating that we talk about participation levels within the sport are dropping, at the younger age groups. So obviously that's an area we need to address within the grassroots amateur and community game, and within the schools. We need to obviously do a lot more work to create community clubs, amateur clubs, and create that school to club links to encourage more younger people to play the game. And I don't think that's just an issue in our sport. I think that's an issue in a lot of sports at the moment. I just think probably the amount of sports and activities and opportunities now that are available to young kids, there's so many options for them now, probably compared to what there was maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago. That probably is not helping. But then there's also now a generation of gadgets, isn't there? So a lot of kids not getting outdoors as much or being as active as we probably saw, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, you know. So that's probably playing its part as well. So there's certainly an area for the game to address that side of things. But what frustrates me at the moment, Dave, is that we're actually losing kids at that age range of 19 and 20 where, you know, I just don't feel at the moment as a game we can afford to not only be losing kids getting into the game at a younger age, but losing the ones that we've already got in the game. Mm. That's what frustrates me. You know, I think it's fantastic that we've got, you know, our scholarship pathway, our academy pathway. There needs to then be a reserve grade pathway. I mean, it frustrates me even now where I'm at a club where we've got our academy and then first team, and I'm having to let kids go at 19 because they can't all go into my first team. That's the reality. And had they had another 2-3 years of developing in the reserve grade system, well, do you know what? They may have actually become a first grade player in 2 or 3 years' time. You know what I mean? That's the reality. You know, it's no coincidence when you look at a lot of clubs who've got their younger players, their 19, 20, 21-year-old players who are in their first team squads. Most of those kids are generally out on loan, aren't they, to a lower division club for that development reason. So, for me personally, I don't see why we shouldn't have a strong reserve grade in place, which, again, I think would be a better development tool for those kids to, you know, once they come out of the academy, they go into reserve grade, they're playing against other players of similar age, that sort of 19, 20, 21, 22 years of age, but also against some very good first grade players who are possibly coming back from injury or are down a little bit in confidence and out of form. And I just think personally that's the way forward. I mean, I know it helped me personally in my career when I started at Salford. I played in that Alliance League, and I remember, you know, going against Wigan and playing the likes of Harvey Howard and Simon Horton and people like that, as well as, you know, some of the top Wigan kids of that age group as well. And I think that certainly helped, you know, in terms of my development as a player. And I think it's something I feel we need to bring back into the game. It certainly frustrates me when I hear stories that clubs weren't willing to buy into it because they felt it was going to cost so much. Well, that's a load of rubbish, to be honest with you. It wouldn't cost you a hell of a lot to run a reserve grade. It wouldn't cost a lot of money at all. And I'd be glad to give up the cost of having a... If it meant I have to take one less player in my squad to fund a reserve grade, I'd do that. The problem at the moment, probably from our point of view as a club, is, you know, our chairman and CEO and myself to a degree, you know, don't see the benefits of investing in a reserve grade at this moment in time, because the actual reserve grade competition is just not a structured competition. There's only seven teams in it. You've got Summer Championship, Summer Super League, and you only play the Super League clubs once and the Championship clubs three times. And I have to, no disrespect to teams like South Wales and Keighley, but I think some weeks for my kids, it's like, well, send them down to South Wales reserve grade, you know, when they could actually be on dual reg playing League One against Toronto or Doncaster playing for London Scholars. So some weeks it probably suits us more to have them in League One, and other weeks it'd be nice to have a reserve team so they could go and play the likes of Wigan and Warrington and Hull FC, so, and Halifax, you know. But it's a tough one at the moment. I think personally the AFL need to be stronger on this and make all Super League clubs have a reserve team in place, as well as an academy and a scholarship. And we've got two clubs currently in the Super League that don't have any youth set up in Salford and Lee. So I think it needs to be something across the board. I think if you're a Championship club, then it's a case of, well, if you've got the finance and the infrastructure to fund a reserve team or an academy and a scholarship team, then you do that. You know what I mean? You're more than welcome to do that. And if you can't, then it's not a priority or not an essential at Championship level to have that. But I think it needs to happen. I think what that would do then is keep our kids in the game longer, you know, because you get a lot of kids that get disillusioned at 19. They're in the academy. They come out of the academy. They can't all then go into Championship or League One squads because they've already got squads up and running and in place. So where do they go? They may go back to the community game, but some of them probably just, you know, give it up because they just think they can never make it. So I'd like to think that if we had that reserve grade in place, then you're keeping more kids playing at a decent standard, at a decent level, in good systems, getting well coached, and potentially you're giving more opportunity that some of these players could potentially become first grade players of the future if they get to 22, 23 and they're not quite cutting the mustard to be a first grade player at your time, then they may fall back into the Championship because they might know, do you know what, that's my level. Or they may fall back into League One because they go, that's my, they realise then it's their level and they'll go back into those divisions or back into the community game as a whole. But I think we need to address that and address that very quickly. We need to keep our kids in the game longer and give them a better chance. And then on the flip side, we then need to address how do we encourage more kids to play the game at the younger age groups so we can keep these numbers and talent pool coming through.
To be fair to your club, though, I mean, you're doing, you know, like you say, more than most, aren't you, to attract these kids,
so,
to get them playing,
yeah,
and what have you. I know with the conversations that we've had about where your base is now in Ealing, it's far,
yeah,
easier for people to get to and commute to than in other,
yeah,
areas that have been around London.
Uh-huh. No, absolutely, absolutely. Now, we're pretty lucky down here. I think it's one of the positives of London. You know, the fact is that there's probably now 28, 30 community clubs in and around the London and Greater London area. Now, I know that they've not got age groups in every club. Some are just open age groups. Some have got junior setups and whatnot. But, you know, the exciting thing for me down here is there is potential to continue to grow that and develop that. There's so many areas and so many boroughs that you could get into. You know, the fact is for us here at Ealing, what we've found is, you know, we need to develop a club here at Ealing because there's, you know, the closest ones, I think Richmond and whatnot, is probably a little bit further down the track. So we're working hard at the moment to not only just get into the schools to obviously engage with the kids and promote the game and whatnot, but we're in talks of trying to, you know, get in the colleges. So we've got the pathway into St Mary's University, and then we're trying to set up a community club here too. So because the reality is there's no point going into all these schools and getting kids excited to play rugby league if they've got no club to go to. And that's where I think in the past, you know, some clubs have fallen down in that area because they've spent a lot of money on development officers and whatnot, and they've just gone out spreading the gospel of rugby league. But the reality is those kids that get, after that 6-week program, they're like, yeah, I really want to play rugby league. And then it's like, well, where's my closest club? Well, it might be, you know, and especially in London, you know, what would normally be a 3 or 5 mile trip down the road at 5 o'clock at night could potentially be a 45 an hour round trip, you know what I mean, to get there. So it puts a lot of parents off. So it's, you've got to face with the logistical battle down here. But maybe in the past, there hasn't necessarily been enough clubs locally joined up with the schools that that you're attacking to get into the game. So it's important that, you know, that's for any club. You know, they attack schools where there are community clubs, strengthen those community clubs that are already in place, and then obviously look to try and set up new clubs as you expand your game. So, but there's great scope and opportunity down here for us, and we are working extremely hard to not only engage the local population to rugby league, but we are in the process of trying to get some volunteers together, school teachers engaged, so maybe, you know, in the future they can set up a junior community club here in Ealing.
I think that's a real, real interesting and forward-thinking way of developing the sport, actually, because quite often we've associated spreading the gospel of rugby league in this country as getting an AA,
yeah,
roadmap out, sticking,
yeah,
a pin in it and saying, we'll have a club there, and then there's no,
yeah,
underpinning of it, you know, which has always,
yeah,
been an issue, hasn't it?
Absolutely. And that's the same if you look at the past history, you know, that's the same with the professional game. You know, just looking, like you said, looking at the roadmap and going, right, let's put one there. Well, it's all well and good saying let's put a club there, but you know, you've got to have a smarter approach. You know, for me, you've got to get an amateur community game up and running in and around that area. You need that going, and then you need to probably get a semi-professional club up and running, and then you put your professional club in. You know, it's got to be that process. You know, you need rugby league people on the ground in those areas, and we've seen that probably in the past, Dave, haven't we, with clubs that, you know, it's been at the thought it's a good idea to, you know, let's go and regionalise and just go put a club in here, a professional club in here, and that's all well and good. You've got a bunch of players that probably aren't from that area, they're from wherever they are, representing that city or that town, which is great, but the reality is when the money runs out, what do you have? You've got nothing, you know what I mean? And the thing for me is you've got to make sure you've got that foundation underneath, so to speak. So if you can make you know, whether it's you set up a community division of teams, or whether you get some community clubs in that town or village or city or wherever you're trying to establish a rugby league, but you need to get the amateur game up and running first, and then you can get into the schools, or you attack the schools first, but set up some clubs of that, so the kids have got somewhere to play locally. That gets your community club up and running, and then you can, as you get bigger or the game gets bigger in that area, then you can maybe go, let's get this team into League One, you know, because now we've got a couple of junior clubs playing the game, so we've now got 12s, 13s, 14s, 15s at that club, and there's another club there and another club there in with the vicinity, so kids coming through, now they can fill into the League One club, which might be filled with some, if there's a university set up there, you've got some university players and you've got a few of those kids coming through the community clubs, and the club might sign a few from the north or whatever to put in there, you know, and then obviously you get it off the ground, and then it just continues to grow and build as the infrastructure and the club builds and grows through funding and whatnot, and then eventually you get your pro team in there, and then you've got that underpinning then, haven't you? Mm. You know what I mean? So, and that's, you know, you only have to look at the Catalan model, and why that's worked over there is because rugby league is there. There's a community game, there's a junior game, there's a semi-professional game there, and then you've got your pro club there at the top of it, at the top of the pyramid, you know, so it all sort of filters down. And in the past, we've seen clubs get put in Wales and Gateshead and Paris, and you know, we've got one in Toronto now, and it's a case of, well, yeah, you know what I mean? It's all well and good, but there needs to be a plan of putting some foundations and infrastructure there, you know, otherwise my fear is when the money runs out, those clubs go kaput, and, you know, it just feels like a wasted time.
Is this in some way where you can be a bit inspired by your own journey in rugby league? Because you've played at some of these clubs where, with all due respect, there's not been a lot underneath, haven't you? You know, so like you've played at Sheffield where, despite trying to develop, it was still always swimming against the tide. You've played up at Gateshead where, again, it was almost like a team parachuted in some respects. And then you've also done the other side of it on your career, you know, Barrow where they're always trying to talk more with their amateur setups. Castleford, which produces, you know, so many really, really good amateur players. You know, you've sort of seen the whole model there, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. I've been very fortunate, you know, with my career that I've managed to, you know, probably go to all the different outposts of rugby league and experience life there. And I think something, even as a player, I was always driven by going to clubs that were trying to build and move forward. I don't know what it was, you know. I always had that about me as a player. I wanted to try and help take these clubs forward, and it's the same with me as a coach now. You know, I want to do the same here at London. I want to, you know, make it better and grow it. And, you know, and I think probably now as a club, you know, when I sit down to, you know, I sit down with the CEO and I have a chat with him, and I chat with the football manager and things like that, and I say, well, you know, if we're being honest to you guys, probably London's gone about things the wrong way, you know, in terms of, you know, we're a prime example of a lot of money and a lot of effort was put into London, and, you know, back in the early days without very little infrastructural foundation underneath, you know what I mean? And now it's sort of 20 years on now, and we actually now have that infrastructure underneath. Now we do have a strong community game. We have got, you know, a League One club nearby in London Scholars. We're now the pro club. We've got our, you know, our pathways in place in terms of our scholarship, our academy. We're aiming to try and get a reserve grade in place if the reserve grade competition gets up and running. You know, we have now got a community department engaging with the local community. We're talking about developing more community clubs and getting that school to club link. We've got the links in with the St Mary's University, and now we're linking in with Ealing College as well now to try and put some links into that as well. So we've got all that infrastructure in place now, whereas that needed to be in place before you put the pro team in, if you know what I mean. We've probably gone about it the wrong way, so you could probably argue that we've done it the hard way or the longer way. The journeys took a lot longer than it needed to. If they'd have done all that from the start and thought, righto, we want to get London, we want to develop London as an area for rugby league, let's get in there, let's get a strong community game up and running, let's put the semi-pro team in, let's now put the pro, you know what I mean? I think London may have been successful a lot earlier and may not have found itself in the position it is now. But I'm very excited and hopeful of where we're at the moment and what we're building and where we're potentially heading. So I think we're in a good place, and it's probably a good model now for a lot of other, well, clubs or even the game in the future to look at when they're looking at potentially expanding the game or developing the game further, you know.
Andrew, thank you very much for a fascinating insight there.
Keeping you up to date with everything rugby league. This is the Final Hooter on Radio General.
Andrew Henderson there, and I'm sure you'll agree, what a fantastic bloke, what a job that he's doing down there at London Broncos. Currently find themselves in second place in the Kingston Press Championship. Just a quick run through the results. Dewsbury Rams are on the rise. They beat Rochdale Hornets 40 points to 10. Featherstone Rovers defeated Batley Bulldogs 42 points to 14. Halifax defeated local rivals Bradford Bulls 20 points to 18. Oldham held on to defeat Toulouse by 14 points to 12. And Sheffield Eagles finally returned to winning ways, winning against Swinton Lions by 42 points to 34. I mentioned in that interview with Andrew that we were going to hear from Steve Tyra talking about the reserves. We're also going to hear from him talking about his career. But first of all, I caught up with him after that win against the Bradford Bulls. You've sort of been through this before. You've been down at this club when they've sort of been right up at the top of the league. Yeah. You've been there when they've had the taste in this middle eight structure.
Yeah.
What can you say to some of the younger guys, perhaps like Brandon Moore and that, who are just sort of coming in and starting to flourish?
Yeah, I just think Brandon's been fantastic this year. Obviously, we lost Ben Kerr, who's our senior hooker, and Brandon stepped up. All I'd say with the young boys who are coming through, just keep doing what you're doing. Hopefully, older campaigners, as you put it, can get us through the games, but without these young lads that we've got, without the reserves that we have, that the club should be applauded for, we'd probably be out of it. So they're coming in and they train hard, and they're doing a good job, so they push us on. Not all of them are playing every week, but the ones who are, they're doing a really good job, and it's great to see them playing for us.
That's probably the first time in about 12 months that I've certainly seen Elliot Morris, and you can tell with that 12 month development, he's going to be some prospect, isn't he?
He's an absolute, I don't even know what the word is for him. He's just so strong. You give him a job and he just goes and does it. He's an absolute gem of a find. And he just keeps getting better and better every week. It takes four or five players to put him down, and sometimes he still doesn't go down. So, you've got to give Richard Marshall and Ian Crowe, the club, Fax Trust, you've got to give them the due for keeping this reserves going, because we wouldn't have had Elliot otherwise, and we wouldn't have had Brandon otherwise. So, a pivotal thing for us to keep that reserves going.
So there he is, Steve Tyra, talking about the reserve competition, which Andrew Henderson was talking about at some length before. But he was a man, Steve Tyra, that was amongst the points at the weekend, kicked four goals for Halifax and on the way to that 20 points to 18 win against the Bradford Bulls. And he reached 2,000 career points. He wasn't the only guy to reach 2,000 career points over the weekend, by the way, because Paul Sykes of the Dewsbury Rams hit not one, but two milestones. He played his 400th career game at the weekend against Rochdale Hornets, and he reached 2,000 points for his career. But, as I mentioned, I caught up with Steve Tyra, and we had a bit of a chat, really, about his playing days.
Let's reflect on this career then, because obviously I first came across you when you was playing for St Helens. You got into the Saints first team at a time when, it was superstars all over the field.
Yeah, I was... I probably came through a little bit before I was probably ready, looking back, and I was a little bit starstruck by the type of players I was playing with. You don't even need to name them, that Saints team speaks for itself. So I didn't really relax enough when I was getting my opportunity there, and probably didn't play as I could, and it didn't quite work out for me there. I absolutely loved my time there, and I'm a Saints lad through and through, and absolutely loved the club.
As a hometown boy, I can't imagine there being anything better, than representing your
hometown
team.
My very first game, I made my debut against Catalans, and I came on for Jamie Lyon. He came off.
That says it all.
Does it get better than that? It doesn't, does it? So it was just like, and then you're coming on to the type of players who were at that club, it was just unbelievable. But like I say, sadly, it didn't quite work out for me, and then I went a little bit into a bit of a mess, really. I got sent on loan a few times and didn't really settle, and the only time I settled was when I come here, and this is my home. I absolutely love playing for Halifax. Since I walked through the door, I've never even spoke to another club. I've just been happy here, and I want to see out my career here.
couple of stints at Widnes involved in all that. Yeah. And also you mentioned, was it Crusaders and Salford you also represented?
Yeah, I went to Crusaders their first year in Super League, which...
That was an experience.
Oh, it was an absolute mess. I met some fantastic people down there. The team was some of the best lads I've ever played with. But it was just an absolute circus, as everybody knows. So that weren't a great year for me. And then Salford was all right. I enjoyed Salford. Salford's a good club. I enjoyed it playing at the Willows. I played pretty much every game of the season that year, and I enjoyed it. But it didn't quite work out for me staying there. And then obviously I did a full year at Widnes. I thought I was a bit unlucky not to get offered a Super League contract there, but that's how it goes. But luckily enough, Dennis Betts told me I wasn't staying, and within half an hour Kyle Harrison was on the phone and he brought me to Halifax, which was by far the best thing that's happened to me in rugby league since then. So like I say, I absolutely love playing here, and I just hope we can get into that top four and kick on and make the club keep rising and get great again.
It would be fair to say that you've never looked back.
100%. As soon as I walked through the door, it's just a family club. It's a great club to play at. We're probably not where a club of this stature should be, but you know, it can get there. It's got the infrastructure, it's got a reserves, it's doing all the right things, making all the right noises. So you know, it'd be nice one day to play Super League for Halifax, but that's not the be all and end all for me anymore, because I've had a crack at it. But hopefully that stuff that I'm doing and stuff that the lads are here doing now can put a platform in for the future to make Super League.
He's had a great time at Halifax, and let those times continue. Halifax currently find themselves in fifth position on the table, the level with Toulouse Olympique, who lost at Oldham at the weekend. But they've got a slightly lesser point difference of, I think it's 105 points, which there is the difference between Toulouse Olympique and Halifax. So that is keeping Halifax outside of the top four. Whilst we're talking championship, let's just dip our toes in Kingstown Press League One before we move up to Super League, shall we? And Barrow Raiders won at the weekend against Gloucestershire All Golds, 36 points to 6. Newcastle Thunder defeated Doncaster by 20 points to 10. Hemel Stags notably got their first win of the season with a 25-18 success against fellow strugglers South Wales Ironmen. Hunslet defeated Coventry Burrs at home by 56 points to 24. The Toronto Wolfpack juggernaut continues. They defeated York City Knights in Toronto by 64 points to 22. Whitehaven were given one heck of a battle at home to Keighley Cougars before winning 28 points to 22. And there was a good return from injury for T. Ritson for Workington Town. He scored four tries as Town went on the rampage and beat London Scholars by 46 points to 16. The only team that I haven't mentioned is North Wales Crusaders, and what a day it was for them. They were playing away at Oxford. Unfortunately, on the way down there, their team coach decided to pack up. They had to wait for a replacement bus to get them down to Oxford in the first place. And then after the game, after winning by 52 points to 20, a great win at Oxford, by the way, they then had one heck of a journey getting back home again. So let's hope that they are fully recovered and charged for their game at home this weekend against Whitehaven. That's going to be an interesting one, to be honest. Whitehaven doing particularly well, just tucked in behind Toronto. The Barrow Raiders tucked in just behind Whitehaven as well.
Find out more. Go to radiogeneral.co.uk.
This is
Warrington Hospital's Feel Better Station.
Radio General.
The Feel Better Station for Warrington Hospital.
Radio General.
So, having had a look at the Kingston Press Championship and in the Kingston Press League One Division, let us turn our attentions to the Super League, shall we? And last week, there were victories for Castleford over Hull, for Catalans Dragons against Lee Centurions, for Leeds Rhinos at home against St Helens, for Salford Red Devils against the Huddersfield Giants, for Wakefield Trinity against Warrington, and for Wigan Warriors getting back on the winning road against the Widnes Vikings. I want to turn my attentions first of all to a crazy game that involved Catalans Dragons and Lee Centurions. Lee actually were leading 28 points to 12 at half time, only to see the advantage they had get overhauled, and a try 5 seconds, yeah, that's right, 5 seconds from time, which secured the victory for Catalan's Dragons. There is a new man at the helm of the Dragons, and it's Steve McNamara, and this is what he had to say to the press after the game.
Yeah, pretty vital, the 2 points, to be honest with you. Probably the craziest game I've ever been involved in. I can't think of a game with probably more incidents and swings of momentum and strange decisions from both sides, and yeah, one of the craziest games I've been involved in, and a finish like that at the end, obviously in our favour, you know, just obviously makes us feel a whole lot better than probably the opposition right now. How many turning points do you want in a game? Like, you know, we had a terrible start. We, you know, there was blokes in the sin bin. There was blokes laid out, getting carried off. Something more or less scenario. You know, there was so many momentum swings in the game. It was incredible. So, you know, I think probably the way we fought back, well, the back-to-back tries that we scored at the start of the second half, what really got us back in the contest and got us close to the opposition, probably helps us. If we just, you know, we couldn't carry on defending the way we defended in that first half, otherwise we would have been looking at a cricket score against us. So probably was the one for me. But the resilience the team have shown to overcome that, I mean, losing your halfback's pretty tough early in the game, and then Mikel Simon as well. So I was pleased that we actually managed to get ourselves back in some sort of shape and order, and I thought Luke Walsh stayed us around the park in the tap very well. We want to be a team that competes to win a competition. You know, ultimately that's the aim. This team wants to win a competition, but we need to learn how to defend. You know, we certainly need to, and that was, you know, the start of our of the game for us defensively was woeful, and the players know that, they understand that. At half time it was just about trying to keep a little bit of composure and not let the game get too far away from us, because I felt if we could stop Lee scoring, we would have enough points in us to win the game.
So there he is, Steve McNamara, giving his verdict on that game, which was won by Julien Bousquet, scoring right at the end, right at the death. Catalan's Dragons 40, Lee Centurions 36. I'm not bitter. Honest, I'm not bitter. Right, let us switch over to the foes at the weekend. And it's Wigan Warriors who make the journey over to Perpignan this coming weekend. And our man, Steve Manning. Oh, by the way, before I move on, I must thank Phil Fernley for sending through that audio from that particular interview with Steve McNamara. Much, much appreciated there. Let us move over to our man, Steve Manning. He caught up with Sean Wayne, and this is what the pair of them discussed.
Well, Sean, job done on Sunday. You're back on the winning run.
Yeah. I mean, we've gone 3 games now. We've done okay with a strong team. So I don't mean that in a detrimental way to young kids, but having a more senior team has helped us immensely. I thought we've made some improvements. Our D was a lot better. The detail in our D, which we concentrate on, was massively improved. So, you know, happy with the performance.
And obviously, you left Liam Marshall out for a rest sort of thing, and Lewis comes in and scores in the corner.
Yeah, and he did just okay, Lewis. That weren't one of his best games. He can do a lot better. But I've got Tom Davis and Liam Marshall coming back as well. They're fit to go. So I'll make a tough choice this weekend. Who's going to play?
And I suppose as much as anything, because obviously the players that have come in, you know, they've made an impact this season. I suppose it's about player welfare and making sure they're fresh come what's coming up as well, as much as anything.
Yeah, it is. And we've got some big games, you know, we've got some huge games coming up. We've got a short turnaround before the Warrington game, then we've got a semi-final in a few weeks' time. So we're trying to make a judgement on what my semi-final team's going to be, how many games they need to play, and I've got Joel to come back, and so there's a few little scenarios which I need to think about beforehand.
But just, I mean, I know it's a few weeks going on, but in your own mind at the moment, have you got the team that you want to put out dependent on, you know, Murphy's Law or the injuries?
Yeah, I have. But Benny Flo will be in it, and he's no chance. So I've got roughly what team I want to play in this one with the people what's available, and hopefully we can ride a bit of luck this time. I think we do it, and we can put a strong team out against Warrington, but we've got some against Salford, but we've got some real tough games coming up before then, and it starts with this one on Saturday against Catalan.
Tony Club, a perfect ending, wasn't it, really? He comes on, and I think a few minutes later he scores a try, and I think in some of the media papers he was a player of the match.
Yeah, I won't go that far. I think I got carried away there, a bit romantic for Clubby. But he did well, no doubt about that. And he's not sore, he's good to go, and he's training today. So a massive well done to Mark Bitcoin and Paul Johnson, getting him up to speed very quickly. And I thought he had a very, very good game, but there's still loads of improvement in him.
And now you've got a trip this weekend to Catalan Dragons. You had a great result there last year, but it's not about last year, it's about Saturday, isn't it?
100%. It's going to be a different kettle of fish. They've got a few players missing now through suspensions and different things. So, you know, they're in the same boat as us, and it's two tough teams going at it, but it's an hard place to go. It's going to be about 26 degrees on kickoff time, so it's going to be a real tough one on Saturday, but we need to make sure it's tough for them. If we keep hold of the ball and play the game in the right area of the field, and that's what we did last time against Catalan, our completions were good, then we can challenge them again this time.
So there he is, Sean Wayne, giving away his secrets possibly to how Wigan could beat Catalan's Dragons. Let us just switch on over though to Warrington, and over recent weeks we've had the news through that Kirk Gidley was going to be retiring come the end of the season. Again, our man to speak was Steve Manning, and here is the conversation that Steve had with Kirk Gidley.
Well, Kirk, before we talk about a localish derby this coming weekend, your thoughts on that loss at the weekend?
Yeah, disappointing one. Look, they're playing some good footy, certainly in Wakefield at the moment. We just made it hard for ourselves, I think, you know, to start with our last plays, and I was, you know, it's a big part of my game and I guess the halves to sort out finishing our sets well, and I didn't think we'd done that well on the weekend, and we put a few balls dead, which then seven tackles, and it just puts a lot of stress on, you know, your team defensively. So it's an area that we need to fix up for this week.
Now, I know that you're obviously, from a club point of view, and probably play upon your chicken each game as it comes sort of thing, but given the context of some of the defeats above you, it was just a shame that you couldn't get that win to just put you on the coattails for that eighth spot, which you still have a chance of.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. We sort of zeroed in on these last five games after the Challenge Cup game against Wigan, and knew there was five rounds to go, and we wanted to have a real good crack at winning all five to try and get us up into the eight. Look, that was a loss on the weekend. It still doesn't change our focus about where we want to be in the next three games.
And you've got Lee Centurions, who at the moment are obviously below you, but they put up a fantastic performance before they went down at in France. So it should, on paper, be an entertaining and probably an high-scoring game.
Yeah. I mean, they've played some great footy throughout the year at different times, and they got us in the early round the start of the year over there, and played some good footy that night. And we need to, as I say, we need to clean up a few things in our own areas around game, and it's another big game for both clubs.
And I suppose, dependent where you do finish, whether it's in the eight or in the middle eights, if it is the middle eights, it's a big marker to get a win against a side that's going to be in that situation as well.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think both teams want to win as many games going into the middle eights, you know, to build some confidence into their team. But we'll just, I think I'll worry about, I guess, the middle eights or the top eight when that comes around after these three games. It's about focusing just on this week at the moment and sorting out these last three games, but just taking it this game to start with.
And from your own personal situation, last week you announced that you were retiring from the game. How big a decision was that?
I mean, when I left Australia, I'd always planned to be over here for 2 years, and I only signed a one-year deal with Warrington to start with, and then extended for another year. So I guess always had that 2 years in my mind. I was always open to staying longer, but I think deep down I knew, after getting to a couple of months into this season, that mentally and physically, I'm ready to finish up, and I'm happy with that decision.
Because I suppose at the back of your mind, it's, you know, you, in an ideal world, you play till the year dot, whatever sort of thing, but I'm assuming that obviously, as much as anything, the body tells you when it's time to, as it were, give it up sort of thing.
Yeah, although my body's still holding up pretty well at the moment. I have no major issue this year. I've played most of the games. So yeah, my body is reasonably good after all these years. I suppose mentally is the other part of the why I'm happy to finish up at this stage. I've been playing for a long time. I've been playing first grade and in different rep teams. So mentally, you've got to be up for every game. And I just feel like the time is right at the moment to hang the boots up, which I'm happy with that decision, and I finish on my own terms.
So there he is, Kurt Gidley of the Warrington Wolves, talking retirement, talking about playing at this weekend against Lee Centurions. That's a game that if you're in the hospital, you'll be able to hear live on Radio General. We are approaching the end of the show, but sometimes a story sort of like hits you flat in the face and you feel that you've got to talk about it. So at the weekend in the North West Men's League, there was a fixture abandoned in Division 4 between Runcorn and Culcheth Eagles, and it came after the collapse of one of the Culcheth Eagles players, Adam Cooper. Unfortunately, and very, very, very sad, he's passed away. It does sort of really affect me, the fact that somebody who loves the game of rugby league, who played it at amateur level, can suddenly go out to a game and not come back. It just shouldn't happen that way. I know that he was a big part of things over at Culcheth Eagles. Before that, he actually played at Lee East, and I caught up with Lee East's Simon Reynolds the other day to have a chat about Adam and just what he was like. Well, Simon Reynolds, under-18s coach at Lee East, I'm chatting to you regarding the tragedy of the weekend, the loss of Adam Cooper, because Lee East is one of his previous clubs, isn't it?
Yeah, Adam played down here between 2011 and he finished the end of 2013 season. Just speaking to people since Saturday, when we were just getting back from our away fixture at Thornhill, and we heard the news on the bus, and the bus went silent, and then obviously more news started coming through, and since then people have shared memories of when Adam was down here, and what a good guy he was, and the life and soul of the party wherever he went. I've managed to a pleasure to be involved in a couple of teams where he's played. He started off through a friend of mine, came down to the Lee Message Board team when they was formed, and then through that he then came down to Lee East and played second team. The memorable trip up to Egremont where he represented the first team sticks in my mind, but even on nights out, he was the life and soul of the party, and he'll be sorely missed.
Tell us a little bit more about him as a guy.
You knew he was there when he came down training. No disrespect to the guy, he liked to mess around in training. He was one of them guys that he took the game serious, but he liked to enjoy it as well while he was down. And that just proved what type of guy he was, that he enjoyed everything he did. And when he was down here, the comments that we've had off other lads, that he was a loved one among the lads. Obviously, you get players that come in and go back. He wasn't a lead lad, so he could have been one of those that he came in, played a few games, and then disappeared into the background. But he weren't. He came down from Culture if he wanted to test himself a little bit more. He did do, and then. Obviously, because Culture were then struggling, he came down, he was honest, he was open, and he said, I'm going to go back and help my hometown club get back on the right track and help my stepdad rebuild that team. So that's what he wanted to do.
So it sounds from it, he's a massive loss to Culture first and foremost.
Yeah, he added some real quality down here as a player, so no doubt he would have added some real strike play to Culcheth, and as a guy involved in a team, you need people like Adam to keep your team together as well, and and no doubt he did that on the field. And sadly, he passed away, but he passed away doing something that he loved doing.
My thanks there to Simon Reynolds. It's always so sad, and my condolences, thoughts and best wishes go to everybody involved at the Culture Eagles Club and his family and friends. He'll be sadly missed. Right, we're almost at the end of the show. There is just enough time just to run through these fixtures. So, in the Betfred Super League this weekend, it's Wakefield against Castleford, it's Huddersfield Giants against Widnes Vikings, St Helens take on Hull FC, Warrington Wolves host Lee Centurions, Wigan Warriors go to Catalans Dragons, and there's a game on a Sunday. It's rare, isn't it? It's Salford Red Devils taking on the Leeds Rhinos. We're just about out of time here, but it's been a pleasure bringing you this. So my thanks go to everybody that we've had on, and to Steve and Phil for the use of the audio.
Across Warrington Hospital.
Across Warrington Hospital.